we're here in church. I got a confession for you this morning. My plan was never to be a pastor. I wanted to be an astronaut. Seriously, I really did. Like, that was my whole plan from as long as I can remember. From being a kid, I just kind of had my head in the stars. I was just enraptured with everything related to space and astronomy. I went to, like, summer deals where we got to build our own telescope out of PVC pipe and all this sort of stuff. I really just had my eyes fixed on going to space. And then I was in high school when Apollo 13 came out in the theaters, and it was just like, that is what my life is supposed to be about. Defying death and living in space, going to the moon, going further, all this sort of stuff. So, I mean, it was more than just a passion to me. It really became my career focus. I decided that I was going to go into aerospace engineering. I came this close to joining the Air Force ROTC program and going to school in Daytona Beach at an aeronautical university, but at the last minute, I got an equal opportunity from the University of Kentucky. It's the state I lived in at the time, and I decided to go mechanical engineering and still will find my way to space. And that was my whole plan. So I'm sitting in, like, freshman, like, all my classes, like, going, I'm going to space. That's why I'm sitting here. I don't know why you're sitting here, but I'm going to the moon, like, sort of a thing. And I go through my whole first day of classes, and I'll never forget when I got to my last class for the day. It was introductory calculus. And we sat down and we jumped in, and like 10 minutes into the class, I'm starting to feel very uneasy. Like, I'm going, wait a minute, I think they have now covered everything I ever understood about math, and it took them 11 minutes to do it. And I just got more and more uneasy as I sat there, to where I started to realize towards the end of the class, I have made a horrible mistake. It took me 50 minutes in a college classroom to completely recalculate the value of my dream job, and one semester of calculus was just too high, so I dropped the entire thing. That's why part of the reason why I am here today. Today we are continuing a series that's helping us look closer at an offer that is really at the core of Jesus' message. Last week, we looked hard at what Jesus really meant when he invited people to live their lives here and now in the kingdom of God. Not heaven one day far away, although it would include that, but here and now, life under God's rule, under his active authority, and then to learn how to live in that kingdom by becoming Jesus' disciple. That is the core of his message. But when you consider Jesus' offer, you're constantly confronted with a question of value. Of value. Is what Jesus offers worth what it takes to lay hold of it? Sounds great, Jesus. Is it really worth all that you say? And last week, we described Jesus trying to give you a value estimate on life in the kingdom of God, and he described it as a treasure. This vast wealth buried in a field that you have to sell everything you hold to lay hold of that. But unless you perceive value in that treasure, no matter what it is, those are just words. If it's not treasure to you, those are just words. One man's treasure is another man's trash. If you haven't really thought about that recently, then just go look in someone's garage, for example. Somebody else's trash is somebody else's treasure. It goes that way all the time. And at one point in my life, I thought being an astronaut was a treasure, but I had not computed the cost of calculus. And that day in the classroom, I was really forced to grapple with what I truly valued most in life. Jesus was a master at helping people reevaluate what they valued. He constantly would force people to look closer at what is it that you really value and what is most valuable. And in one of his most famous and probably his most controversial teachings, he does this in a really unforgettable way. I want to take you to a passage in Luke chapter 14. If you've got a Bible or an app, feel free to look it up yourself. It'll be on the screen. But this is a tough passage, a tough teaching from Jesus. It says this, "Now large crowds were traveling with him." Jesus has an audience. "And he turned and said to them, 'Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it. Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, "This fellow began to build and was not able to finish." Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? This is one of those passages that Jesus' PR agents hated, okay? Because it is a make-you-squirm sort of passage. Like, you can just imagine PR people coming to him after this teaching and going, "Jesus, did you have to say it that way?" Any other opera, you know, like, could you use any other words in that? So much in this passage has been prone to misunderstanding over the last two millennia. It's been the source of a whole lot of offense when people hear that from Jesus and they're like, "What?" And in general, it's one of those passages that even if you kind of want to be for Jesus, it makes you second guess him a little bit. Like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of with you. What? Hate your family? Hate your life? Carry the cross? Like, if this is the cost of discipleship to Jesus, it seems way too high to even really consider it realistically. What could he possibly mean? Exactly. Exactly. To understand this statement, and actually to understand a lot of what Jesus taught, you have to take into account how Jesus taught. He taught in a very different world than we live in. This was 2,000 years ago. There's no voice recorders. There's no internet. Paper wasn't even readily available. There were very few people who could write, and even far fewer people who could write quickly listening to somebody teach. If you wanted people to remember what you said, you better make it stick when you said it. So Jesus constantly phrased things in a barbed way, meaning when he said it, it was meant to sort of lance into your heart and your mind. It got stuck there. You had to kind of think about what he actually said. Like, people would walk away routinely from Jesus going like, "Did you hear what that guy said?" Because the way he said it was like stuck in their heart and mind. They were auditory learners. They didn't have the benefit of reading a lot of stuff, and they didn't have newspapers and internet and all that sort of stuff. So these statements were designed to linger in your mind. They sort of rolled around in there. If you were paying attention at all, you're like, "Now, what did he mean by saying it that way?" And like much of the way Jesus teaches, the more you think on it, the more you reflect on it, the more it starts to roll into focus. Take, for example, that phrase, "Hate your father and your mother." Now, you got to take that into context. He is talking to a Jewish audience at the time. They would have been really clear on the Ten Commandments, okay? And one of the Ten Commandments is really clear: honor your father and your mother. So is Jesus honestly contradicting the Big Ten? Like, is he just like going directly against it? Is he advocating parent hatred? Is that really what he's going for? It's really inconsistent with the way Jesus seems to esteem and hold up the scriptures in pretty much every other context that you see Jesus in. So what does he mean? Well, he's touching on some things that are pretty valuable, isn't he? He's touching on the idea of your parents, people who brought you into this world, and that in this culture especially, we're meant to be esteemed and honored and valued. He talks about your kids, people that maybe matter more to you than anybody else, even your own life. And he's stacking those valuable things up next to being his disciple. Jesus is messing with our value system right here. He's posing a question by stacking these things together. Might there be something so incredibly valuable that it would make your love for your children look like hatred? Might there be something that valuable in life? Or take that phrase, carry the cross. Carry the cross. Now remember, we think of the cross and we think immediately of Jesus. He's the most famous crucifixion victim of all time. But this is pre-crucifixion. No one at the time thought of Jesus and the cross together. Hadn't happened yet. So why is he bringing up this image of the cross? Well, when his listeners thought of cross, They just thought of the numerous Roman crucifixions that sort of littered the landscape. Literally, the Roman government would just nail you up to a cross on the side of the road so that nobody missed you, kind of like a billboard saying, remember who's in charge and what happens to people we don't like. Now, this was a pretty common sight, actually, but it was not a sight that anybody was looking forward to, and it's something that nice people didn't think about. Turn your head, walk the other direction. No one wants to dwell on crucifixion, just victims. So Jesus pulls this image, carry your cross. What did that mean? What is he talking about here? Why use that picture? Well, reflect on it a little bit more. If you're carrying a cross, what's going on in your world? What's going on in your mind as you're carrying the cross? I'm not sure, but I bet it has something to do with this basic thought. It's almost over for me. I'm heading to the place of my execution, holding the instrument of my own execution. This is it. Just about over. Curtains for me. When you're carrying your cross, you have come to the end, which is an interesting thought then. What if you substituted that into Jesus' phrase? Whoever does not come to their end cannot be my disciple. For what it's worth, by the way, this is not a catchy slogan, okay? Jesus' marketing department would much rather have gone a totally different direction. They would, if you think about it, do you know what Jesus really needed instead of this whole carry the cross business? He needed Burger King's old marketing department. Remember them? Have it your way? Like, much better, right? Like, if Jesus would have sort of hitched his wagon to have it your way, talk about popularity, right? That's what we would much rather prefer to hear from Jesus, not this cross business. How about have it your way? You can imagine this. Hey, Jesus, yeah, we'd be glad to follow you. We're really ready. We know you're the Son of God. What you got? Carry your cross. Do you have anything else? Like anything different than that? Anything that's a little bit more palatable for me? Because I think it's like we'd like to have some God in our life, but if that's the price, that's a little prohibitive. I'm not sure I've got it there. I think it's really Jesus' lack of have it your way. It's what we fear about him. It's certainly what I feared. Just so you know, like when I was in school, shortly after the whole astronaut kerfuffle, I really was in a place of kind of just trying to figure out my life, and it was really the have it your way life. I was trying to figure it out and do my best. Along the way, I run into this group of Christ followers who are at my university, and I kind of start hanging out with them, and I do mean kinda. Because I was not really looking to be a Christian at college. But these people were just, they were something sort of magnetic about them. I liked being with them, but I limited my exposure to them to one day a week. Like I'll just, you know, I'll give you Tuesday night when they had their meeting and I would kind of go and hang out with them. The rest of the time, I was having it my way, all right? And I was living the college life. I mean, and I was really doing a lot of things that in some respect I knew probably weren't great. But at the same time, I wasn't really prepared to turn loose of them at all. In other words, I had not come to my end. So Jesus, I could sort of keep him on standby a little bit. I could sort of, well, maybe a better way to say this is that I was a dabbler when it came to Jesus. I wasn't really a disciple. More just sort of dabbled in being in and around Jesus. I had not come to my end. I was not ready to be a disciple. I would do want to say this real quick, just time out. Dabblers are totally welcome here, okay? I'm not trying to create some second-class citizen thing. I'm just trying to make a point that dabblers, although welcomed and loved here, you do want to be clear on this. Dabbling was never something that Jesus himself advocated. He didn't recommend it for those who really wanted to experience the kind of life he was talking about. Dabbling versus discipleship. Do you notice then what Jesus says in that famous line? He says, whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. I don't know what you hear when you hear that, but I used to hear when Jesus says, you cannot be my disciple, like he was just being really hard-nosed about this whole thing. Like Jesus is gonna set the bar so high and you're gonna have to gut your way over that bar and I don't really care what you think. You can't be my disciple unless you can jump this high. That's what I used to hear when I heard that statement. But the more I've reflected on Jesus' barbed words, the more I've come to this conclusion. I don't think Jesus was being mean. about saying it. I don't think that was his tone. I don't think that was his spirit in it. It doesn't seem consistent with who he is in all these other places. But it did lead me to this idea. What if it's not that Jesus won't let you be his disciple, like it's entrance into a club, but what if you just wouldn't have the foundational components to proceed any further unless you get this? What if there are some essential prerequisites for being a disciple, and he doesn't want to set you up to fail by having you ignore them? What if that statement is actually care for those who would take him seriously? Think about it. If you wanted to become a doctor, and many of you have wanted to, or many of you perhaps even are, if you've done that, then you know you're going to study biology, you're going to study chemistry, you're going to study anatomy. Those are prerequisites to being licensed to deal with people's health. Is a university professor being mean to you if they say at some point, unless you pass these subjects, you cannot be a doctor? Now, I suppose they actually could say that rather meanly to you, but just because the fact that they say it, it doesn't mean that they're being mean. It means they value what you're trying to pursue. Unless you really would prefer the doctors that biology, anatomy, chemistry are somewhat optional, you know, take it, you know, I sort of dabbled in anatomy, you know, are we ready? Jesus goes on from those points to make a very famous statement then about counting the cost. He uses these two illustrations, building a tower, kings waging war against each other, basically to get at this idea that you want to think through. Do you have enough to complete what you're about to start? It's like he's trying to get people to stop for a second. He's trying to help them realize it's worse to get halfway in and realize, I didn't think this through. About anything, just about in life. It's worse to just get into the middle of it and then suddenly realize I did not calculate the costs of what I was stepping into. And we get that. You expect doctors, before they step into med school and residency and all that sort of stuff, you better count the cost because it's not going to be easy along the way. It's worth it if you really value that in the end, but there's a cost there. We get that for astronauts and calculus. That's not a hard sell. We actually get this for a lot more of familiar things in our life. Before you go plunk down money at a gym and start a hardcore healthcare program or health improvement program, a trainer is going to tell you, are you all in? Have you counted the cost? Are you ready to go throw away the Oreos? Are you ready to go, you know, stop at fast food and all that sort of stuff? And are you ready to give yourself to this program? That's just getting in shape. It's the same sort of thing when you buy a home. Have I calculated the cost of what this is going to cost me? Is it worth it to me? Do I have enough? Or think about it even for something really important like getting married, committing yourself to somebody for the rest of your life. In fact, it seems the more valuable something is, the more you are urged to think it through before you commit to it. And for those that would be his disciple, Jesus urges you, make the value calculation. Go ahead, think it through. Is this worth the cost to you? Meaning, are you done having it your way? Is that a valuable thing to you? Are you ready and willing to follow somebody else? Because until those things are really honestly valuable to you, you are going to be a rather miserable disciple. And I don't just mean you'll be bad at it. I don't mean to like, I'm just sort of like talking down about, I'm talking about inwardly, you will be a miserable person trying to be a disciple if you're not clear on those things. And for what it's worth, I think there are miserable disciples everywhere. I see them all the time. They're like astronauts who cannot stand calculus. Just can't, don't even like it. Never like, well then why are you an astronaut? Exactly. There are people that are miserable trying to follow Jesus because they're not done with having it their way. They come to Jesus looking for an improvement on their life. They have not come to their end. What they have tried to do is slap a veneer of Jesus over the top of have it your way. And they're easy to spot because of how frustrated they get with God all the time. They end up very disillusioned, very disappointed with Jesus because he doesn't deliver their way, the way he ought to. It's almost like this implicit understanding that we had here, Jesus, what's going on? But they never understood that the Psalm 23 life we talked about last week, this picture of abundance and courage and all, you know, grace and patience, blessing, all these sort of things, it only comes when you actually live as Jesus' disciple and not a dabbler. That's the only way you get to that life. And I think when it comes to being a disciple, even though the Psalm 23 goodness of God and life in the kingdom looks good, I think most people analyze the cost that Jesus is hinting at and they say, too high, not worth it. But I don't know that we've thought this through. So to help you think this through, I want to invite Jewel. Can you come up here on stage here for a second? I want to help you see this because I think it's something that we really miss all the time. So you ready? All right. Thanks for coming up here to do this, by the way. This is Jewel, by the way. Serving you all the time, saying hello. All right, so here's the thing. I think a lot of times when we count the cost of following Jesus, we get really focused on what it's going to cost us, meaning what does it mean to come to the end of your life? So I'll take that one. There you go. So, Jewel, let's just say for a second, this is the cost of following Jesus, like everything that represents coming to the end of your life or signing away, having it your way is kind of an operating principle. It's all in here. And this is the cost. Here's what I'd like you to do. Could you just kind of hold this bag with your outstretched arm, okay? Just put it, your arm straight out, as straight as you can. There you go. Not too bad, but it's pretty heavy, though. But the longer you really try to do that, the heavier that's going to get, all right? And that's what a lot of us think of. We look at, here, just keep it out for a little bit. Not getting off that easy. A lot of us think of, wait a minute, for the rest of my life, you're going to make me hold this? This is heavy. And here's the thing. We tend to think over here, the cost of not following Jesus, well, that's free and clear. Look at that. Doesn't that feel better over here on this side of your arm? It feels great, doesn't it? And we think that's all free and easy and clear. Like there's no cost here at all. Why follow Jesus when this is so easy? But I don't know that we've counted all the costs. Well, one cost you may have forgotten to count is the cost of not following Jesus up until this point. So here you go. You got it? Here, you're going to put your arm through there. There you go. So this represents the cost of not following Jesus from the moment you were born to now, whatever now is, not following Jesus. And that has a cost all in and of itself, doesn't it? What does have it your way really cost you in your life? Does it cost you damage to people that you love? Damage to yourself? Have it your way results in a lot of our addictions and a lot of our regrets, a lot of our pain. I think one of Satan's greatest strategies is to get you so focused on what it's going to cost you that you kind of forget how bad it already is. But that's not the only cost, too. You've also got to compute the cost of the future of not following Jesus. From here forward, what's that going to cost you as well? You got to think that through as well. So if I'm not going to follow Jesus from here forward, what's really the cost of having it my way on into the future? What's the cost to my heart, to my biceps, to my to my sense of contentment and peace? What about my eternity? What about forever? What's the cost there if I don't choose to follow Jesus? The cost of following Christ is high, for sure. But you've got to count both costs, just like you do for anything. What's both sides of those equations, because I think you'd be hard-pressed to say the cost of discipleship is higher than the cost of non-discipleship. All right, you can take a break, man. Thank you very much. Thank you. Give him a hand. Thank you, man. Go rest up. We got two services, all right? With that picture in your mind, I want to take you to a different passage, one where Jesus is referring to exactly what we're talking about, same sort of thing, but he uses a whole different way to get at it. This is found in Matthew chapter 11. Come to me, all you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Jesus uses an agricultural metaphor with this yoke idea. A yoke, and maybe you've seen this before, it's a picture of a wooden device that sort of harnesses two oxen together as they plow or as they pull something together. And Jesus uses this as a picture of discipleship. His invitation is stop doing life on your own and let me pull with you. Is your burden heavy? Well, then let me carry that with you. It's a beautiful picture of a rest. Jesus says he wants to help. He wants to bring relief to you. But it's pretty clear that the yoke is discipleship when you look at the context of what he's talking about. And hold on, wait a minute. I thought the carrying the cross was discipleship. What's the difference between the yoke and the carrying the cross? I thought, what? Exactly. They are the same thing. The easy burden, the easy yoke, the light burden, the cross, they are all the same. Being yoked with Jesus is another way of describing the end of your life. The end of your life. It's the end of have it your way. Because you give away autonomy when you're yoked with someone else. You are tied to them. And Jesus obviously is positioning himself as kind of the lead in that. It's the same picture. But it turns out that is where the rest comes from. The end of your life is where the rest comes from. Are you weary? Are you carrying a heavy burden? Jesus tells us pretty frankly, you are your own heavy burden. It's you, it's me. Your grip on your own life is what is weighing you down. Because you don't have enough to manage all that. You didn't make yourself. You didn't create yourself. You don't have the resources to sustain yourself. But Jesus longs to show you the way of true soul rest, a level of rest that you can't get through sleep or even through just working out and treating yourself well. It is a rest that penetrates down to the very invisible core of who you are. And he wants to show you that way. He says, let me take these heavy burdens off of you. My way, especially compared to this, is easy. It's a light burden. It brings rest to the inner places. He wants to show you how to live in the kingdom of God. But it is not your kingdom. And you will never find soul rest while you are running the show. That weight is crushing. That burden is heavy. And he wants everyone who would be his disciple to understand before you start. He loves you far too much to watch you grow miserable over time. Being Jesus' disciple, it's both this initial commitment, but it's also an everyday decision. So how do you do that? How do you live in that place every day? Well, that's why you gotta be here next week, okay? You gotta be here next week because we are gonna show you, we're gonna talk a little bit about how you actually make that decision. How do you keep making that decision? In fact, another reason you're going to want to be here next week is that we will be making communion or the Lord's Supper available here as a part of our weekend worship experience. We don't do this all the time here on a weekend, but we really felt that it would be important to do that here on that day. Most importantly, for those of you who those barbed words from Jesus have sort of stuck in your mind, we are going to give you an opportunity to become Jesus' disciple next week. If you want to. And for those who have already responded to Christ before, this is going to be a chance next week to make sure you've correctly counted the cost and you've gotten really clear on the treasure again, okay? Friends, true discipleship to Jesus, it begins at the end of your life. But then again, so does the real rest for your soul. So what's it worth to you? This is not about a snap judgment. It's not about some impulsive decision. Count the cost. But make sure you count all of the costs, all right? Don't overlook the fact that Jesus really is offering you the offer of a lifetime. As we close here, here's what I ask you to do. Would you please just stay seated? These are some heavy things, some big ideas that we've been talking about. And our team has prepared a song for you to kind of breathe just a little bit. To consider, even though you might be letting go of some things you do know and trying to lay hold of what you can't quite figure out, it's still a good bet when you're talking about Jesus, the shepherd of your soul.